Blog Talk Radio.
Nation, welcome to the show here on another Friday. Sign Guy with you. Usual QT Vokes on assignment today. He has a few things to do. But before we jump into things with our guest today, some show notes. If you are looking for some pro wrestling, WTF in Carmel, Indiana tonight. WCWO, like usual, at the Outlaw Arena in Indianapolis. 3-2-1 battle up here in our neck of the woods in Seattle, Washington. SPW in Muskegon, Michigan, VIPW in Lanford Station, B.C., SWE in Macon, Georgia, PWAS in Melvindale, Michigan, and PCW in Kershaw, South Carolina. Tomorrow night, Emerge in Columbus, Indiana, PWF, where you can find me, in Bremerton, Washington, UEW in Santa Ana, California, BTW in Salinas, California, PAPW in East Haven, Connecticut, RCW in Chatsworth, Georgia, Proving Ground Pro in Petersburg, Illinois, UWC in Horner, Illinois, AWE in Fort Kent, Maine, UPWA in Rushford, Minnesota, ICW in Elmhurst, New York, KSWA in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, CPW in New Kent, Virginia, and RICW in Pawtucket, Rhode Island tomorrow. Without further ado, I would like to welcome our guest back to the show. It has been way too long since we've had
way
him on here.
Way too long, brother.
way too long. Keith Atkins, how are you doing?
Doing fine, my brother, doing fine. Sign Guy, the man who can take the most abuse and like it. In all of professional wrestling, it is an honor to be with you, sir. You've taken
pleasure
more beatings than anybody.
As usual.
I just wish I could have taught you to not break a fall with your face. But other than that, how are you, man?
I'm doing all right, and I'm still showing youngsters today the imprint of said face on that cement floor. That floor was never the same.
The floor was never. So the floor took the worst of the beating. You're the only guy who can claim that. That, as far as I know, you are the only guy I know who can claim that, brother. The concrete took the worst of it.
It's still dented, and I'm all healed up.
Oh, man, thanks for having me on, man. We've been trying to hook up, and then, man, life gets in the way. You got different stuff going on. I really appreciate you being willing to reschedule me here. What, you've had to do that like a couple of times for me now.
Well, I knew persistence always pays off, and we would get you on here. Now, you have drifted into the semi-R word. Now, of course,
yes.
Everyone knows from listening to our show, there is no such thing as retirement when it comes to professional wrestling, but you're not as active as you have been in the past. You want to tell us what made you want to step away, take a bit of a breather?
Well, it was really, I wasn't liking the level that I was at, to be honest with you. The things that I was doing pretty easily, for almost 8 years, all of a sudden my bumps weren't as good. All of a sudden I'd never been a DeMarcus, I'd never been, a CJ, But, you know, so I knew I'd never had, you know, tremendous agility or anything like that. But I just, I'd look at recent things I was doing. I felt like I was slow out there. I wasn't at the level that I thought I needed to be. And that really bothered me. It really did. Because it had always been wrestling, just, you know, it just even in our little neck of the woods in the Northwest, in the Portland area, God, it was always so much fun for me. It was fun. It was an honor to get to do it. You and I both know that only a handful of people, everybody wants to do this, but only a handful of people ever really get, you know, really get to, get to go out there and in front of those crowds and everything. And nobody likes to retire. And I of course get it, because, you know, even today I still have, you know, I'll still have that dream, you know, it's right before my music hits. But I really did not want to be somebody in there that somebody else was going to have to carry. Because it's a partnership when you're out there. It's who you're working with, and you both have to work together. And, you know, if I didn't feel like I was pulling my own weight, then I was making whoever I was in there have to work harder. And I really didn't like that. I really, you know, I don't want to be the guy that, you know, somebody else had to carry too much to make the match look good. Because, you know, you know as well as I do, it takes at least two in there to make a match look good. You can't go in there by yourself. And, I didn't want anybody to feel like that when they went out there with me. So that's really why I slowed everything down. Doing an occasional appearance. Had a real big honor from NWWA where they inducted me into their Hall of Fame, and, you know, I got to referee a match for them. And, you know, I can see myself doing maybe some more of that. The heart's willing, but it's just not the same. The body's just not responding the same anymore.
I officiated the match. Was that your first time putting on the referee uniform and going out there?
It wasn't the first time. It was one of very few times that I'd done it. And I'll tell you what, when you referee a match, you learn to respect our refs a lot more when you're actually the one out there that's got to it's a lot harder than it makes it look. You know, you got to be in the right area. You got to be in the right spots. You got to be making the right calls. And especially depending upon who you're in there with, it can be complete chaos in trying to keep all that together. It was not the first I'd done a couple. It was the only show that I'd done as a referee. That was kind of, and that was another honor thrown my way, because I wasn't really expecting that. And when Nawa asked me to do it, it was a blast. It was a terrific time.
You mentioned refereeing and going to the Hall of Fame. One of the things that a lot of wrestlers will try to transition to when they're not going to be as active in ring anymore is the booking aspect of it. Is that something that ever came into your mind as a possible way to stay connected to the business, or was it not really something you thought you would enjoy?
I love the creative process of it. But at the same time, I've had terrific. I've had people that I love, closest brothers, do the booking. You know, everybody, I've seen everybody do it. Havoc, Jason Sullivan, Cameron Starr, Andrew Watson, you know, Damon Scythe. I've seen all sorts of guys do the booking. And, you know, that is a headache I'm not sure I want, because you're, you know, imagine it's trying to put together and hold together a show. You've got this idea, and then, I mean, shoot, like we've said, life, you know, life comes in and interrupts it. All of a sudden, you're expecting somebody for a main event, they can't make the show. All of a sudden, you know, one guy won't work with the other guy. All of a sudden, you know, somebody down the card, somebody's girlfriend gets just a friggin' mess. And I absolutely love the creative process. I love working with guys when I get the chance, but actually booking a show is just, you know, more of a headache than it looks to be anything that I want to take on. I'd certainly love to help. What I really like doing is, you know, is working with guys after they already know, you know, what they want to do or how they want their match to finish. That's already booked. And, you know, if I could give them some advice on, okay, you know, make this, you know, how to make this a better match or how to make you come across better, or just because they're really the devil's in the details. And, you know, the more little details you can do something better, the better the match turns out. You know, some of the legends we love, you know, in this business, are terrific workers, you know, some of the most famous guys. But, you know, if you try and think what they had beyond five moves, you couldn't necessarily put it together. And I was certainly that way, but, you know, I learned a long time ago that just in changing, you know, changing a detail or adding a detail to a match, or just adding a setup for, you want to do this big move, so add to it or setting it up properly, you know, it is more important than actually when you execute the move and has a better result. And just being able to help somebody, you know, help some guys through some stuff like that is what I really have the most fun. But to actually be in charge of a show, I really can't see myself taking the time or losing what's left of my hair to try it.
One of the things that was a thing for your career is sometimes you would get in there and there would be some bigger name people, guys that were familiar to fans because they had appeared on national TV where they were really big independent legends that had a pretty good following across the country. Looking back on things today, who would you say were some of the bigger names that you got to work with in your career?
Right off the top, Raven, when he came back, and working, you know, doing his seminar. Really, really down-to-earth guy, but very intelligent in knowing, you know, actually what, you know, what needs to go in a match and how it needs to go into a match. And of course, you know, he sold out, I believe it was the Nava show in Gresham. And just for him there, it was standing room only. It was, and just, you know, knowing that you were going to get to work with him even a little bit was just fun, and it was exciting, and you know, that was kind of goes back to what, you know, to what I went to before, because it was, you know, just, it wasn't, you know, he was at a point where he wasn't doing a lot of huge or big moves, but just some of the little things that he was doing, and the audience was just, oh, the crowd was just behind him 100%. And just, you know, some stuff like that, you can have an excellent match, and you can have it easier than you thought. Yeah, working with him was great. The Dave Rose Circus, when Jake the Snake Roberts was in town, that was a lot of fun, because Jake was a terrific guy, had a lot of fun working with that. You know, there's a lot of those guys who do it right, but you know what? There's a lot of those guys who come in and, you know, they come in with an attitude that, you know, they were on the big show. They're not on the big show anymore. You know, this is the minor league to them. And if I'm the minor league to you, you know what? That's fine with me. But don't treat my audience, don't treat my crowd like they're minor league, because that was bullshit. There was a guy who came in, and he was, you know, he was doing a lot of rounds, and I won't mention his name, but you know, he was popular. He was in great shape. He was, a terrific guy. But by the time he'd gotten to, you know, by the time he'd gotten to our show, you know, he was going to work with me, but, you know, he didn't really want to work a match, did a quick DQ with me, and then he wants to go out and, you know, sell his merch. And I had an issue with that, not because of his talent, but because of his attitude. You know, it's, you know, just because the crowd that comes into my venue, you know, it isn't the WWE crowd, and that does not give you permission to shit on my audience or the people that are, you know, that are coming to my shows. If you don't think I'm worth a shit, then you don't have to work with me. That's fine. Don't shit on the audience, man. I got a real problem with anybody on any level who does that.
Absolutely. Can't agree with you more. Another thing that happened on a somewhat regular basis during the course of your career was something that should be happening up here in our neck of the woods fairly soon, and that's outdoor shows. I know some wrestlers have strong opinions one way or the other on having to wrestle outdoor shows. What was your personal opinion whenever you wrestled outdoors?
You know, I didn't have one. I wrestled in the rain once. You know, it's not fun. It's not, you know, it's not exactly your first choice. But you know what? If you've got people that have paid their money and taken time out of their lives to come and sit, and they're sitting in the rain, you owe it to them to, you know, to go out there in the rain and work your butt off. That's, you know, that's the contract. That's the, you know, that's the covenant between you and the audience. So, an outdoor show, of course, you know, on a nicer day, hey, it's a lot of fun. But it's mostly what works about that is, you know, did you bring the audience there? Did you bring the crowd there? Did they buy the tickets? And if they did, you know, want to see me wrestle in the rain, I'm fine with that. You know, it's not the ideal. It's not the ideal circumstance, but, you know, damn it, go out there, work your butt off. So outdoor shows can be a lot of fun. I've had some fun in some outdoor shows. But it's, you know, it's all about the crowd. And that's really what I understand why nobody retires. Because there is an energy. You get an energy from those people, you know, sitting there watching the ring, focused at the ring. You get an energy off of that. And it's a high, man. It's a drug. Once you get that, it's so very, very hard to give up. And that's why Ric Flair never retires. I mean, every time his music sounds, even if he's just doing an appearance or in a walk-in, you know, that's the electricity. That's the excitement. That's why he could never really give it up. And, you know, and others are like that too. It's all about the crowds, and especially on our level, because, you know, we're not making a lot of money on our level. But the high you get off of being able to perform something in front of those people and have them react the way you want them to, or the way you thought they should. There is nothing like that in this world. Nothing at all.
Speaking of the music sounding, I know that over the course of your career, there's been a few entrance songs that you've utilized. What would you say were the songs that played when you went to the ring? I know you didn't have a large number of them, but there were a few that you utilized.
Mostly what I utilized was Game On by Trace Adkins, because it had that hook right in the beginning. And that's what you want. That's, you know, it was just like I looked at, Stone Cold Steve Austin and the Broken Glass, you know. I knew I wanted, once that sounded, I knew I wanted people to understand, you know, I was coming. I wanted them to know that right away. I wanted them to get, you know, that energy, good or bad, face or heel, you know, right away. And when I listened to that song, and Trace Adkins, he's a country singer. He's like, and he's a big guy. He's, I think he's about 6'4", deep southern drawl, deep voice, and he comes out, and the very first part of that song is nothing but his vocal singing, "I got my game on," and then, you know, and then the drums hit and everything like that. That, once I heard that hook, you know, that was to me, that was the same as Austin's Broken Glass. And that was the one I used most of the time. That was my favorite. A couple other times, is if I was with, you know, tagging with somebody, a couple other factions, there were some things, you know, there were some different songs. But definitely Trace Adkins, that was my favorite. That was the one I really hung to.
Now, in the back, some of us could have sworn it was actually Tex Thompson singing that.
Kind of. Tex does a little karaoke. I bet he could pull that off.
No, there were definitely talk at times that maybe that's what had happened there. Well, we've hit the part of the show that we call word association. I will throw out some names of some people that you most likely came across in your career. first word or two that pops into mind is the answer. Are you prepared a round of word association? All right.
Yes, sir. Let's go.
Okay, here we go. First name, Gregor Petrov.
Wow, it's hard to sum him up in one word. Heel.
Jason Sullivan.
Mentor.
Malaya Hosaka.
Classy.
Triple D.
Friend.
CJ Edwards.
CJ, what's a good one? It's tough to pin him down. Agility. Amazing agility.
Bolo.
Mentor. Another mentor.
T-Rex.
Gosh, this is harder than I thought. I got to sum all these people down in one word. T-Rex. Brother.
Sunny Days.
Sister.
Sam Sims.
Creative.
Ken Stillwell.
Which one was that last one?
Ken Stillwell.
Oh, brother.
Dan Closser.
Wow. I gotta sum all this down in one word, huh? I thought this was gonna be easier. Let's see. Dan. Well, it's two words, but first chance. First shot. He gave me the first shot.
Kellen Wraith.
Which one?
Kellen Wraith.
Oh. Dedicated.
Quiz.
Oh, wow. Quiz. Underrated.
Dayafula Dobashi.
Family.
The final name, Latino Blanco.
Talkative.
All right. Well, as I mentioned at the top of the show, QT couldn't be with us today, but he left me a series of questions. So, Fez, help you as I get to QT's questions for you here.
QT's question coming right up. All right.
All right. His first is that he saw your YouTube video entitled BCW 83-2014, Keith Atkins versus Lone Star. His question is, when you addressed the crowd in the first minute and 42 seconds, you mentioned three accomplishments that you had on your BCW resume. Can you remember what you mentioned? His hint is one of them involved Dayafula Dobashi.
Okay. I had just beaten Dayafula Dobashi for a title that he'd had through, I think it was UIWA, if I'm remembering that correctly. So, and that was, I think I was the first person who had, he'd won that title. I was the first person who had beaten him for that title before later on he was able to get it, sneak it back off me. But, if I'm remembering correctly, that's what it was.
All right. Let's see, his second question was also from the same video. Now, he said that when T-Rex got in there, that he didn't check your opponent for foreign objects. Were you disappointed that T-Rex didn't check Lone Star for foreign objects?
Lone Star can, he's got, he wears just a singlet, but then he's got elbow pads, he's got boots, he's got stuff on the boots. You got to watch somebody like Lone Star. Lone Star's on both sides of the fence as far as good guy and or bad guy goes. He's tricky. He will wrestle you one way. He'll wrestle you by the book, and then if it's getting a little close, then he might just pull something tricky out of his hat. But you wanna check somebody like him. He's experienced. He's crafty, and maybe he won't break a rule, but maybe he'll cut a corner just a little bit.
Okay, QT's final question is, he saw your YouTube video entitled Saeed Shola versus Keith Atkins. You won this match by DQ. His question is, are there any truths to the rumors that had Saeed Shola pinned you fairly, then you would have been required to read chapter 5, verse 6 of the Quran that covered the subject of declaring a fatwa against Western rock and roll and cheerleaders on roller skates, since it was a stipulation match?
Back in those days, Saeed Shola, very devout, and he did have unusual stipulations to his matches. As I recall, that was one of them. I remember winning that match by DQ, so I did not have to. But yeah, he was running around with Dabashi an awful lot back in those days. Those guys were absolute terrors in the ring when they were together. But Saeed Shola, he was very crafty. He could beat you, but he was also very crafty. He wanted to get in your head, and he wanted to see if he could if he could mess with you a little bit, throw you off your game.
He would do that with the ring announcers, the referee, the security staff, pretty much anyone around him, I noticed.
Oh yeah, he would just, in saying something and doing something, just in a gesture, he was very tricky. He could get you off your game, or just slow you down enough to make you wonder, what is he doing? What is he thinking? Why is he asking that? But usually, you know, your hesitation will give him a chance to take advantage.
One of the things that pretty much everyone that owns a pair takes pride in wrestling is boots. I know that you had boots that you wrestled in for pretty much all of your career, if I remember correctly. Did you have any set, like, rituals with the boots? Did you take care of them a certain way, put them on a certain way, and did you have a favorite pair of boots for the course of your career?
Mostly, my favorite pair was the first pair I'd purchased. I'd put some money aside, and I'd purchased, and they were royal blue, which was the color that I wore significantly throughout my career. When I came into wrestling, my original idea was to wear black and red. But after I'd gone to a few indie shows, I noticed, my God, everybody was wearing black and something. A lot of guys were wearing black and red or a combination like that. And, you know, I had to ask myself, well, how am I going to stand out? How am I going to? And the gear is an important part of that. Now, I know a lot of guys, you know, don't make a lot of money. They have to cut corners. You know, some guys, so, you know, some guys have to wear the cutoffs. And for some, it's part of their gimmick. For others, it's just their, you know, a matter of putting a few dollars together. The boots are pricey. Even when I bought mine, I spent $250 for them, and that was 10 years ago. So, but I liked the fact that I could buy black, but everybody has black. I could buy white. A few guys have white. Later on, I got a white pair of boots just to kind of mix things up. But if I was going to be different, if I was going to stand out, you know, I needed to do something other than the black and red that I thought everybody else was doing at the time. And to me, just kind of a mental opposite of red was blue. Blue is a color that, you know, I can wear and it looks okay on me. So I chose royal blue, and then the opposite of black was white. So I started wearing royal blue and white, and then Wade Hess liked it. He looked at me the first day. He's like, "Man, you look like a Colts player or something like that." But it was different. It stood out. You know, even people going to a show the first time, I'm going to look a little different because, you know, because I'm the guy wearing blue. So, you know, in some ways, that's one of the devils in the details, where you look a little different. You can stand out a little more. And that was why I chose that color scheme. You know, as far as taking care of them, it was pretty easy to take care of them, though. You know, a little bit of Windex, a little bit of window cleaner, you know, and a towel, just keeping the smudges off and stuff like that. You know, because you spent the money for it, so you should be taking care of it. And it's pretty important. I didn't do anything special, you know, except keep them covered, keep the dust off them when I wasn't using them.
Now, you and I had one similar incident. I believe both broken a leg in this business, and you and I both know that doctors and nurses are notorious for wanting to automatically pull out scissors and start cutting off gear. Yeah. I refuse it. I threatened to stand up and walk out of the hospital if they went anywhere near a pair of scissors. I only allowed Tommy Two Shoes, who was the referee that drove me to the hospital, to come anywhere near me until the boot was off. I know you didn't want your boots cut. Do you think hospitals should have a formal policy in place for sports entertainers with broken legs so we don't see more boots cut off of people?
That was, to be honest with you, I would have done the same thing had I been aware. I wasn't really aware that was what they intended to do. It was actually, at that time, my tag team partner was Lone Star. And he's the one who caught the, because they were going to cut my boot off. And that was, remember when I was telling you about the $250 blue boots? Yeah, that was one of them that they were going to cut off. And Lone Star was my tag team partner at the time. And he's the one who stopped him. He's like, "Don't touch the boot. Go ahead and cut the laces, you know, and slide the boot off. But yeah, but don't touch." He's the one that's, you know, one of the things I own. He's the one who saved me on that one. It's hard to say in an emergency situation and stuff like that. And a 100 different things are going through your head at the time. My leg's broken. They're trying to keep it stabilized. Everybody's talking to me. I'm talking to everybody. I'm like, okay, somebody. I was married at the time. I'm like, okay, somebody needs to get on my phone, call my wife, let her know, I'm on my way to such and such hospital and stuff like that. And then they need to call my dad because my wife's going to be home with the kids, and then my dad's going to be the one that has to come out and rescue me out of the hospital. And, it's nothing you plan for. But at times the most important thing is your safety, and if they had cut the boot, well, damn it, it would have sucked, but, would have been able to be replaced. And of course, everything's going on a mile a minute with, what hospital they're taking you for and, what your insurance coverage is and blah, 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 this, that, and everything else. So it's definitely a part of sports entertainment you want to avoid if at all possible. Except for you. You seem to climb to that shit. You just seem to see how much you can take. I think you're a little crazy.
I've heard me described that way. To be fair, I was trying to figure out a plan to get from Indianapolis to Kentucky after breaking my face, because I figured I could walk from the hospital to my next booking no problem, but I passed out.
Yeah, but you passed out.
Now, another thing that a lot of us take care with here in wrestling, like we've been talking about the past few minutes, is injuries. We try not to get them. It's just the nature of the business. Sometimes you're gonna pick up an injury here or there. It's a full contact sport. What were some of the other injuries besides the broken leg that you had to overcome?
Let's see, Billy Two Eagles had to reset a broken nose for me once. Let's see, what else do I have going there? Nothing quite as serious. A broken leg is about as serious as you want it to get. I think I'd had my bell rung a couple of times. But mostly I was able to, to make sure I landed pretty safe. I'd get, a wrist jacked up or pulled muscles or something like that. But for the most part, I was able to avoid a lot of that, which was a fortunate thing. I think Billy Two Eagles had to set my broken nose. I think C.W. Bergstrom ran my face into a guardrail, and I should have turned a little quicker than I did. Popped me a little bit there. But I can't think of anything other than a pulled muscle or maybe a bell rung a little bit, but yeah, that was the leg was the most serious, and I still have the steel rod in there.
I have a plate and 7 screws in mine, and I also won the match. I don't know if you won or lost that, but I won mine.
You won up in me, damn. I'll let you have that one. I ain't going to challenge that one.
I don't want you to break your other leg to see if you could top it.
Yeah, I don't either.
Well, one of the things that wrestlers have to learn pretty much from the beginning is every crowd is different and every crowd is going to like different things. You're going to be able to entertain a crowd in one way that gets a positive response, and you might do something somewhere down the road for a different crowd, and they won't respond at all to it. And some crowds are notoriously hard to please just in general. What would you say was the hardest crowd for you as a performer?
Let's see. The hardest, to me, the hardest crowds are the smaller ones. Because they're there, they want to have fun, but you're also there, and it's quiet, not a lot of people are reacting or reacting to it. It's harder to get them to react. A larger crowd, it's easier to get a few to react. And it can be a real art in just trying to understand the crowd, or just listening or paying attention, to what's gonna work for them, or not. Because you're absolutely right. You can get very complacent if you perform in front of the same crowd or the same things like that. But you want to remember that, hopefully you're bringing in more people. Hopefully each time you're out there, you're bringing in somebody new, and you're performing for that new crowd too. It goes back to what I learned when I was, when I was in high school and college, and I took a lot of acting classes because, I liked the theater and I liked being an actor. And, a saying there is, no matter what, every show is opening night, meaning you might be performing what you're performing for the 100th time, but for the people out there, they're seeing it for the first time. You're making a first impression, even though you're doing this for the umpteenth millionth time or however. And, you need to keep that in mind, that this is a fresh performance that you're going out there and doing, even if you're going through the same motions. And you're not doing it, for the booker or the boys in the back. You're doing it for the people that are sitting in those chairs. Are they getting something out of it? And sometimes it doesn't have to be that much. Sometimes it's just that one high five you give to that kid just on your way out, and you've made their day. So it's a real discipline to keep yourself from being complacent about that. And it's something that I think that gets mixed. Or gets missed, because shows don't move around like they used to. Shows don't go to different or newer venues, like they used to. Don Owens, somebody tried to make an argument online that Don Owens was the only weekly wrestling show that worked. Well, it wasn't a weekly. It was an every single day. It was, every night they were in a different audience. Monday they could be in Salem, Tuesday they could be in Eugene, Wednesday they could be down in Medford or Ashland, or back up to Tacoma, or, wherever they were going, but they were going someplace different every night. They were working a different crowd every single night. And I think that's something that gets missed now is guys get complacent because they're working the same crowd all the time.
Excellent point. Well, we got just a few minutes left here in the show, and I want to make sure that you have ample time. If there's anything at all you would like to say to the listeners, plug and promote anything you'd want. You have any shows you want to put out there, any merchandise, social medias, a favorite barbecue restaurant, anything in the world, the floor is all yours.
I'm very grateful for that. First of all, I'd like to plug this show and thank you for having me on. Give my best, of course, to Mrs. Sign Guy.
Most definitely.
NWWA, let's see there, the Milwaukee Elks Lodge, they've got a show coming up. Of course, I got a lot of my brothers at BCW, North Portland Eagles, and they're on every Sunday night, and they're working their butts off there. They're bringing in a lot of people there, so really excited for the success they're having. Tex, if you're out there, you son of a bitch, you better get better, because I'm sick and tired about hearing you sick. Shannon has offered for me to come down there with some rubber gloves and lube and check your old man prostate. So get your ass fixed, or I'll fix you myself. Let's see. Oh, gosh, everybody, a lot of people are having really good matches. Defy is putting on a really good show up here in the Washington area. Really excited about what's going on with them. Let's see, who else? Mostly to the fans, if any fans are out there listening, you know. I wasn't the best, but you always got my best, and I always made sure I wanted to give you my best, because it was, you know, I was not God's gift to wrestling, but the way I looked at it is wrestling was God's gift to me, and it was something that I needed to appreciate, and, you know, the fact that I could do it when others couldn't, for whatever reason, you know, it was a real honor for me. It was a real honor. It was a real pleasure every time I went out there, and I really, I had plenty of bad matches. There's plenty of matches I'm not crazy about remembering, but it was never through a lack of effort, man. I knew it was a gift to get to do that, and it's a temporary gift. Even though none of us want to retire, sooner or later that shit happens. So if you bought a ticket and took some time out of your life on a show that I was on, I wanted to give you the very best I could give you. And, a couple of nights, those things went pretty well, and really good memories, really good friendships, just really good chapter in my life. So I've got good memories when I look back.
Well, I have good memories of you as well, and I'm sure we will see each other at some point not too far into the future. Always a pleasure, and let's not go so long before you're back here on the show.
My absolute pleasure, sir. Take care of yourself. Bump safe.
Will do, and one more time, please don't try to one-up me with the broken leg thing, because I don't want you to break the other one.
I'm going to let you have that one.
All right. I will take that.
All right, brother. Thank you.
Fans, if you get the chance, YouTube Keith Atkins. You never know. He might pop back up in a ring near you. Sometimes he does that. So keep an eye open and an ear out for the eventual return. YouTube some of those matches. He had a lot of great ones. And we will be back with you right here on Sunday afternoon. We have Dusty Gold out of the Oklahoma area. He is an up-and-coming young wrestler. We'll talk to him, and we will see you at shows near us. If you're anywhere near Bremerton, I'll be at PWF tomorrow night. So get out there and support what we're doing there in Bremerton.
All right. Sounds great. Thank you, boss.
Thank you, brother.